You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
Phishing gets more personal with conversation hijacking and attempts on direct deposit instructions. The Olympics have opened. Do you know where your hackers are? Apple finds leaked iOS source code on GitHub. Crypto miners are found in hospital systems. Litecoin picks up black market share. We've got some notes on recent patches. Concerns about Russian influence operations continue as the U.S. midterm elections approach. And are bicycle thieves going online? I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, February 9th, 2018. Phishing shows some fresh plausibility and sophistication as the criminals pay closer attention to their marks. Researchers report a spike in conversation hacking, where criminals interpose themselves into an email thread, spoofing one of the parties to the conversation in an effort to induce the other to open a malicious attachment that carries the Gozi Trojan as its payload. Other observers note an increase in phishing attempts that induce employees to give up their credentials so their paychecks can be directly deposited in the criminal's account. In this scam, a trusted company resource is spoofed, and suspicious employees who respond to the initial phishing email with questions are promptly reassured that, yes, this is legitimate. The Winter Olympics open today, but state-sponsored threat actors have hacked in first. So far, it's mostly phishing and doxing by North Korea and Russia, but McAfee and other security firms are warning that anyone interested in the Olympics should raise their anti-phishing alert levels a bit while the games last. Apple has filed a notice under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act to have GitHub remove leaked iOS source code. Their notice asserts that Apple has been injured by the publication of the code. Specifically, Apple objects to reproduction of Apple's iBoot source code. Speaking to Mac Rumors yesterday, Cupertino said, quote, "Old source code from 3 years ago appears to have been leaked, but by design, the security of our products doesn't depend on the secrecy of our source code. There are many layers of hardware and software protections built into our products, and we always encourage customers to update to the newest software releases to benefit from the latest protections." End quote. Observers think the leak both large and consequential. The leak certainly affects iOS 9, and some think it likely that this particular bit of code persisted into iOS 11. Crypto miners turn up in more uncomfortable places, among them a Tennessee hospital's electronic medical record system. Decatur County General Hospital saw the first signs of infestation in November. It began disclosing the incident to 24,000 patients on January 26th. It doesn't appear the hospital's operations were impeded, but some enterprises have reported that crypto miners have slowed their systems to a crawl, effectively preventing them from operating under anything approaching normal levels. As more criminals seek payment in Litecoin, that cryptocurrency appears to be taking black market share from Bitcoin. Researchers at security intelligence firm Recorded Future have taken a look at 150 of the dark web's top black markets and found that the rise in Bitcoin's price is driving crooks and drug dealers to look for a more affordable alternative. For now, they seem to be finding that alternative in Litecoin. In patching news, Netgear has patched 5 vulnerabilities that TrustWave's Spider Labs found in their broadband routers. And WordPress has issued an emergency patch for version 4.9.3, but users will have to apply it manually. Admins are finding the update comes with some headaches. U.S. interest in forestalling Russian midterm election influence operations remains high, with Congress suggesting strategy to the Department of Homeland Security. Representative Will Hurd told the Atlantic Council Symposium that the model DHS uses to counter violent extremism could be extended readily to countering Russian disinformation. Among those expressing concern about Russian influence operations is former President George W. Bush, who thinks evidence of Russian chaos-inducing disinformation during the last U.S. election cycle is, quote, pretty clear, end quote. He also offered, in a talk at a Milken Institute economic summit in Abu Dhabi, his take on Russian motivation. Speaking of Russian President Putin, Bush said, quote, he's got a chip on his shoulder. The reason he does is because the demise of the Soviet Union troubles him. Therefore, much of his moves are to regain Soviet hegemony. End quote. Finally, an alert listener tells us we should warn you that the geolocations betrayed by Strava could also be used by thieves who want to steal your bicycle. We've looked into it, and it appears the police in a to-us-unpronounceable Welsh town have been warning against this possibility since 2014. What's that town, you ask? Dyfed Piaws? Dyfed Powys? Dyfed Powys? We'd know how to say it if we were from central Pennsylvania or western New York. But we're a Balmer show, hon. Anywho, our listener tells us this is a thing in the U.S. as well. He says, quote, my understanding is that cyclists like to map their rides and compete with other riders. They also list what their bikes are. Thieves go online and look for a bike, see where the ride always stops or starts, and this allows them to wait for the garage door to go up and no one is watching, and they take off. These bikes can easily run north of $5,000 or $10,000 and up. Just an FYI. And a good FYI it is, too, so thanks, listener. It's not just a military OPSEC matter, but a crime prevention issue as well. A bit of awareness we're happy to share. We'd like to include a special warning to whoever it is that's been seen in the Strava heat map pedaling their Schwinn around the Groom Lake airstrip at Area 51. The gray aliens, widely believed to be resident there, are notoriously sticky-fingered, so take your bike lock with you. It gets nuts in the Peloton sometimes, but hey, the truth is out there.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Dale Drew. He's the Chief Security Strategist at CenturyLink. Dale, welcome back. We wanted to touch today on this notion of victim notification and the importance of that. What do you have to share there?
We have a bit of a dilemma from a victim notification perspective. We took an initiative late last year and beginning of this year and made the decision to notify every victim that we identify with our threat intelligence platform. So as an example, just us alone, we're tracking 178 million victims globally. And it's about 60,000 new victims a day. And so we want to do something about it. And so
now, when
we
you started, say a victim, what, to tell me what is that? What's the breadth of what that could entail?
That's a compromised computer done by a piece of malware or a bad guy. So that could be a desktop sitting on a consumer's home, or that could be a server or a desktop sitting within a company or corporation. So a company which has been compromised.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to do something about it, right? And so with regard to notifying our customers who might be victims, that's relatively easy. We've got a trust path to those customers, and we can send them notifications, and they can feel relatively comfortable that it's coming from a trusted source. But when we made the decision to start notifying anybody on the internet who we saw as a victim of a compromise, we're running into a conundrum of how do you notify a victim that they've been a victim of a computer intrusion without that notification looking like a phishing attack?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So
how do you do that, Dale?
and that's exactly our dilemma is we are trying to navigate a way to be able to notify in essence 178 million people who have been compromised by some form of malware that they've been a victim, and here are the steps that they need to take to be able to repair their system in such a way that that person can trust that notification and not think it's a phishing attack. Mm-hmm. And so imagine having to send a notification with no links. If you want more information, you should go to the following locations, but not providing any reference information. Because if you provide a link, then someone can replicate that and put their own link in it. And so we definitely have this dilemma of, we're sort of on this teetering edge of how do you build a trust infrastructure to a large base of people that you don't have a relationship with to make them aware that they've been compromised somehow, so that you can protect and increase the level of security within the global internet. If we could get 178 million people who are currently compromised and either participating in larger botnets or having their information stolen, if we could notify them and have them take action the moment that they've been compromised, we could have a significant dent in the amount of global internet theft that's occurring today. And that's the dilemma that we don't currently have an answer for, but it's one that I think is a very emerging problem that we have to solve for to dramatically increase the security of the internet.
Yeah, it seems to me like it's sort of the equivalent of almost a digital postcard where, you're sending out this message, but at the same time, you're not really looking for interaction with them. You can't become their tech support, so you're notifying them, but you can't have the expectation. With that volume, you can't have the expectation of any really significant interaction, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many people have gotten one of those car warranty expiration letters?
Sure.
That looks extremely official. And it looks like it came from your dealership, and it really is an insurance scam. And so, we have to find a way. And my largest concern is, let's say we do find a way to send a communication, whether it's via a portal or, some other mechanism through their internet service provider, as an example. If we do discover a way of sending a trusted communication to these victims, we have to do it in such a way that can't be replicated for bad purposes by a bad guy. Mm. And so it's a bit of a double-edged sword where we definitely are tired of seeing victims being taken advantage of and nothing being done about it. And so we made the decision that we were going to invest in notifying anybody we saw being compromised. And like I said, it's about 60,000 new victims a day. Mm. But we have to do it. We have to do it in such a way where we can establish some trust with those people, and we can have them have some confidence that when they do that corrective action, they're doing it to really protect their systems and not opening themselves up as another victim.
Well, you got your work cut out for you, that's for sure. Dale Drew, thanks for joining us.
Grant, thank you for having me.
My guest today is Deidre Diamond. She's founder and CEO at CyberSN, a staffing firm specializing in cybersecurity professionals. A few years ago, while attending an industry conference, she grew frustrated with seeing so many booth babes on the show floor, scantily clad women hired to attract attendees into the booth. She couldn't help thinking there had to be a better solution, a win-win for everyone.
I thought, oh gosh, why don't we make them brain babes? And I said brain babes out loud, and everybody, we all looked at each other and we said, let's go to RSA. My team was around me, a lot of my team. Let's wear shirts to RSA that say booth babe crossed out and brain babe instead. And we got stopped and talked to so much that I realized that my story was so rare. Me being a female at the time, you know, mid 40s, and having a successful resume in building, you know, technology and cyber companies. And I realized, wow, I really have such a rare story. And so I started getting out and publicly speaking about, you know, the types of cultures that will foster women and why my career was successful and what the environments that I walked into had for me and that I was able to take advantage of. And then fast forward two more years, going back to RSA, and I'm walking the floors and realizing that all we've done is just change the clothing on these women and we're not training them. And I said, gosh, this is such a shame. These would be great jobs for students, you know, to come see our environments in terms of the events that we put on and the educational tracks and hear about what we're doing and all the jobs. And so I said, I wish we made these jobs for students. And then that sort of, when I realized, you know what, I run a staffing agency, this is a staffing job, why don't I do this? And so brainbabe.org launched STEAM Conference Connection. And that means we take STEAM students from local geographies of wherever the event is, and of all genders, and we provide them for booth services and event services, and we give them videos and training on what's cyber and all the different types of jobs, and also give them some instruction on how to work a booth and how to help the folks that are hiring them to work.
So to play devil's advocate, if I'm someone who's running a booth at RSA or somewhere else, what's the problem with me having attractive people there at the entrance to my booth if really their only job is collecting people's badge numbers, scanning their badges and saying hello and having a nice, welcoming presence? What's the downside for me to hire a professional actress to do that?
So the downside is that we're sexualizing what is a work environment. And you selling sex. If it was just about a pretty person or a pretty human, which is also relative in terms of what's pretty, but let's just go with it, then why not have men if we're not sexualizing the environment? Hmm. And so the argument is, look, we're struggling to be treated as equals, and we go to these work events, and that sort of vibe really takes away from us as women, our ability to be taken seriously or treated correctly. And then from a man's perspective, and if you ask a man this, that's not why they're going to these events. And the ones that are, you know, they flush out pretty quickly. Like, they don't want to just, you know, be talking to just beautiful women in you know, bikinis. They want to learn about products and they want to understand what the services are. And so not only are we making these jobs for all genders, and heck, those models can come to BrainBabe and we'll give them the training such that they understand the field and they show up interested. I'm happy to do that. The problem is we're not utilizing their brains, and the problem is dressing them scandalously, right? And so even with changing their clothing, if we're not willing to educate them on the industry and what's here and what, you know, what we're doing and all that, then we're really just utilizing them to sell sexuality.
Yeah, let's go through some of the practical things that you're getting at here with the situation with the lack of women in cybersecurity. You make the point that there are a lot of reasons why we need to be focused on this.
Absolutely. It's a national security issue, first and foremost. We are short over 1 million people. The numbers are showing to be up to 2 million by in the next few years. And we still socialize young girls to think that tech and cyber is a keyboard and a hoodie in a dark room, which means they're not coming into our field. You know, so this allows us to spread the word and to show folks, and particularly women. However, there's a ton of young men out there who think the same thing and think it's not for them. And the reality is I'm in cyber. I came through the sales divisions of companies and then becoming a CEO of cyber companies to include the ones I'm running now. And so there's all kinds of different ways to be involved in cyber. All those jobs aren't just the keyboard and hoodie job. In fact, without the sales folks and the marketing people and, you know, and all the folks to manage projects, you know, we're going nowhere. So it's really a collective team effort of high EQ and high skills in whatever, you know, your intellectual focus is, whether it's tech or sales or marketing. We need everybody. And so, yeah, this is all about, you know, all genders and spreading the word to so many people that aren't looking into this industry because they didn't think it was for them.
That's Daedra Diamond. You can learn more about the SteamCon connection at brainbabe.org. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.